Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Thank you, Roshi, for accepting our invitation to spend this time with us tonight. Roshi, for many of you, Roshi needs very little introduction, if any, but I will offer her an introduction in any case. Gena Roshi has given her life to this practice for four decades. She founded the Dana Sangha and Center 28 years ago. And she has tirelessly shared her love for the Dharma and her intimacy with hundreds of students. We are all here because of her, so I'm very grateful for that. And I think we all came to hear what she has to share with us tonight. So thank you very much, Roshi, for being here.
Well, thank you, Amy. Thank you for inviting me, and so I can see. Reconnect with some of you I've not seen for a long time, and also keep seeing some people I see more or less regularly, and meet some new people. We founded Dana Center 94, started. I say we because Roshi was with us from the start in this place, and it was really a completely collective place. Without her, without Frank, without some others, I would have never been able to do that. That's really the working of the Sangha. That's sharing the love for the Dharma, sharing our longing for, we don't know exactly what, but which is so strong that we cannot avoid it. We have to do something. We have to express that. We have to share it. We have to connect with people in this intimacy of our longing. And that's what happened when I decided to start in France. And which is still happening, and I see now you, Amy, doing that with your student, with your sangha, inspiring people and sharing what the practice with together, and sharing it in your own way, and like I keep sharing it in my own way. I didn't want to say that I will speak about something special because I didn't want to be stuck in having to talk about something if it was not true for me right now. And it happens that since a few days, I've been in a, because of circumstances, I have connected with a very, very old pain in my life, which I thought was dissipated, something like that, you know. Very old and very familiar in the same time. And I think it's such a good example how we can use practice for this very, personal, but also we are human. We are human. We have pain. We have we move on, and we think that this is over. I have even more than 40 years of practice, and it's true. We move on. We change. We transform, and still there are things which are coming up again in a different way, but still coming up, and maybe even in a more intensive way, which is what I am right now kind of realizing, that maybe the more we practice, the more we can feel, the more we can, we hurt at times, the more we are open, and maybe less barrier there are, which is probably the best thing that we can wish for oneself, even if it's very uncomfortable and painful at times. I remember the one of the first encounter I had with Birdie Glassman, that most of you know, he told me, you know, the practice is about to be vulnerable. And at the time, the guy was such a strong man in charge of a bakery in New York, and seeming so on top of the situation and so on. And I was so moved by that, but I realized it's absolutely true. We become more open, but we become more open and more vulnerable because we have also in the background, we have developed a strength, which is our own strength, but which has been revealed. And this strength which has developed through years and years of practice, and I really believe in the long-term practice. I really believe in keeping practicing whatever happens, even if they feel obstacle, even if we feel that it's going nowhere, even if we are disappointed by ourselves, even, I totally believe in the length of time of practice. And what we develop, this is actually, I would say, an awareness, which is a background of what we are experiencing, which is in the background of what we are experiencing, what we are thinking, feeling, in any thinking, I mean, in any time, all these perceptions, really. But all these perceptions, they happen within this awareness. And that's our strength, this awareness. And this awareness I heard recently Eckhart Tolle saying, we are awareness disguised as a person. What do you think of that? We are awareness disguised as a person. Usually we think we are a person, it's me, trying to develop awareness, trying to become more and more aware of. It's a characteristic that human beings have, and this awareness is more or less developed. I am developing it. Now we take the other way around. I am awareness disguised as a person. I include this person, but I include this person and whatever happens to this person in this awareness, which is first things, very neutral, no? Very neutral, can include everything, and everything. Things that we don't know even which are there, don't know that they are gone, they might come, you know, this not knowing. For that, we have to have the ability not to attach indefinitely to things, to let things function in this awareness. And bon, we attach to things because I want to know who I am. I want to resolve this problem. I want to be sure of this is what is going on right now, and my perspective is right, my opinion is right, we develop this strong sense of person, okay, And the fact that we can consider that I am awareness, disguised as a person, there is already a certain letting go of my desire to fixate this person. And we all have this desire. We need it. I saw a woman with a baby here. It was so moving. A very small baby. I thought, oh my God. Oh my God. How much he has to go. It's beautiful that the practice can include all this. So this awareness. It connects completely, and there is no hazard. I have been right now completely involved with a Tibetan yogi, which some of you might know, which is Shabgar. He has written The Flight of the Garuda, but he has written many other things. And from a book of Matyurikar, the last book of Matyurikar, Carnet d'un Errant, there is big chapters on Shabgar. And Matyurikar has translated many, many works of Shabgar, which was not accessible to us until he did this translation. I'm completely involved in the autobiography. He wrote an autobiography and huge thing. He lived in Tibet in the 19th century. He was a yogi, so he lived in caves of Himalayas. And at the same time, he had very strong relationship with his guru teacher, his root teacher, and with other teachers. And it's beautiful the way he describes his relationship with teacher, his total devotion and love. And also when he was coming out of his cave, he was teaching people. So he was a teacher and he was a student. And he wrote many, many songs, which was his way also to express his realizations or his insights, and also to communicate his teaching with people sometimes. So one of the song I've been with, and I've even talked to about it in the session we just had recently, starts like this. Maintain your body still. Keep silent. Don't restrain your thoughts. Let them come. And let consciousness relax in a state of perfect ease. Two more lines, which I don't know by heart, so I look at my text. At this point, attachment to meditation or non-meditation is gone. The mind, free of mental fabrication, is clear consciousness, vast and transparent. You have all the practice here. All the practice. Keep, maintain your body still. That's what we do. And we all know how important it is. And that if we move in all directions all the time, our mind is agitated. Keep silent is totally connected with maintain your body still. The way to be silent is to listen. That's the best way. It's not about trying to cut all mental things and so on. It's listen. Just listen. Listen to the sounds. Listen to whatever without picking and choosing. And if you have an opinion, I don't like this sound, I like this one, and so on, just keep going. Keep listening. And your opinion goes. And to listen is connected with being still, because it goes together. They go together. To listen, be silent, to be still. Our practice. Alors, don't restrain the thoughts. I have the text. I have the text in French first, so that's my translation. But the French translation is ne bride pas tes pensées. Et brider, that means when you have a horse, you know, you rein the horse, you know. So it's not about having thoughts coming in all direction and being totally agitated and so on, you know. There is still a right pace, I would say, a right direction when you ride a horse. You don't let him do anything he wants. You don't also block him, you know. This is this kind of pace, and you know when it's a right. And in order to do that, of course, we have at certain moments deal with the monkey mind, and the monkey mind it goes in all direction. We all know the monkey mind intimately. It goes in all directions. So at one point, we have to do something with this monkey mind. To give him something to do, that's the best way. Breathing or concentrating on something and so on. We need, of course, a certain training for that, of course. But have the sense, you know, that don't restrain your thoughts. Just see when you are blocking it in a way which is not the natural way, or when you are just giving up into your thoughts, going one after another, and even having the sense after a certain time that you don't even know where it started. It's so far away that you feel that. You are 1,000 kilometers from yourself, actually, because that's how it feels. So don't restrain your thought. Let them come. But let consciousness relax. And that's what the background is. Let consciousness relax. In order to welcome these thoughts, in order to let them have the space to come and to go. And it's a miracle, but our mind can do that. It's a miracle. We don't have to be fixated on thought. We don't have to be run by thoughts. We don't have to repress thoughts. There is in us, there is this immense, you know, at one point he said, really like the sky, you know, not in this passage, but in another guide, in another vast, like the sky, you know. We have this in us, this capacity of taking things in, welcoming things with all what that implies, you know, that the times of pain, the joy, the whatever, you know, all the dimensions of the humanness, you know. And we have also the capacity not to fixate the thing at the extent where this is really me, you know, this is really me. And I'm right, and it's the way it is, and you know, and this is the beginning of being so strong in my opinion, strong in my sensations, even in my feelings, and being run by all this, you know. And again, you know, this awareness, which can contain things, is not about not feeling anything. I would say, actually, even that's a real place of love, this awareness. This is a real place of love, where there is not this, I would say, but maybe the best way to say it, it's a place where the personal and the impersonal meet. And you know, we want the personal badly. I mean, I want to be me. And we want the impersonal, so we want something which is bigger than me. And that's where, in that space, in this awareness, where things can come, are welcome, and are not fixated. This is, of course, also our liberation at this moment, you know. And liberation, I think we have to understand that doesn't mean that we're not going to suffer anymore. You know, this whole hope we all have that we are not going to suffer anymore. I don't believe in it. The way we can really learn to handle suffering. Yes, I can see that. I can experience that, you know. And I can also handle the suffering in the sense that it's not so much a personal suffering anymore. It's not just about me, this suffering, but I can connect with suffering. I can connect with the suffering of so many other people. I know that this suffering is personal and not personal. It pervades everywhere, and that's where compassion arises. That's where intimacy arises. I connect with others. I connect with their pain because it's my pain. So at this point, attachment to meditation or non-meditation is gone in that play, in that awareness, you know. And again, I said we need to train before in concentration and have the possibility for the mind to function like this, you know. And for that we need to be alert, you know, to be alert that I am fixating something right now. I am identifying something so strongly. I'm being identified with something so strongly that I don't want to let go of it. You know, that might be my pain, my joy, my insight, my idea, my opinion, my, you know, alert that I am holding on to it so strongly that I don't leave space for anything else. And I don't leave space for this awareness to be revealed, because this awareness is not that I'm producing it. I'm revealing it. It's very different. I'm revealing it. It's in there. It's in all of us, this awareness. And then I like really the mind free of mental fabrication is clear consciousness. I mean, we fabricate so much. We go one story after another. And if somebody tells us, let go, that's a fabrication. It's not easy to do. It's my truth, it's mine, you know. And sometimes it takes a long time to let go of a fabrication. And the fabrication which has become a pattern, I mean, we all have strong patterns, you know. it's not with that we are going to be to get rid of patterns forever and any time. I don't believe that either. But the moment where I see this is a fabrication, I see that I can work on the pattern. And this pattern usually, which has been fabricated in order to spare me a pain, usually that's how pattern works, you know. I try to avoid something painful with a certain kind of system. When that becomes, and it was very useful at the time, but when it becomes a pattern, when it's fixated, then that's become my jail. It's become my non-aliveness, I would say. That's what is separating me from life, from real life, from really feeling what I have to feel, from really sensing what I have to sense, you know, what is there, but which is blocked. And even if it's really painful at times, you know, like really this whole pain from like my childhood coming up, I said, oh no, not again, you know. And still, you know, there is a joy there. Joy in it's coming out. This is so alive, you know. There is truth in there, and I think we are all looking for truth. There is a truth in the moment where something is undone, something is liberated. There is a sense also of greater intimacy with myself, of not being cut off somewhere. I look at the time. I would like to hear you, okay, and I would like not to be the only one to talk tonight, because I totally believe in relationships. I totally believe in exchange, in sharing, that's how we develop, that's how we unfold, that's how we see our truth and our untruth. That's how we learn, that's how we grow up. It's in relationships. So tell me. That can be about this, what I said, or about something else. Where you are at, whatever.
Stefan?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Katrin, for this talk, which touches me enormously. And I think it's so absolutely right. And I would like to take it just one little nuance further and turn it around. You mentioned this attachment to being right. But I noticed actually the worst thing for me, at least these days, is the attachment to not being wrong. And it's not the same thing. Mm-hmm. Because the trouble starts when I attach the pain to feeling that it is wrong. And then everything explodes. Then I want to avoid, I want to be like this, and the whole number starts. But if I let it be. If I experience the pain without judging that it's wrong, all right, of course, but just the pain actually is bliss. Because it's life. It's like, to me, the pain without making me wrong about it, or without making the pain wrong, or even worse, to make the others wrong for giving me pain. But if I let that be, then the pain becomes love, actually. And it's so marvelous. It's hallelujah, holy shit, I don't know what to say.
Yes, the pain opens us up completely. Yes, yes. And you know, when you mentioned something which is important, it's we think it's wrong to have pain. This is so amazing. I should not have pain. Well, people should not give me pain for sure, but even me, I'm wrong to feel pain, you know? And that's what we have to open up to. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. We are not guilty because we have pain. You know. Life. Yes. Thank you. Sheila.
Thank you, Roshi. I don't know what I haven't anything big to say, just thank you. I feel very tongue-tied, I'm sorry. I'm so pleased to see you and be here, to see you again after all this time. Mm-hmm. It's really, yeah, it's quite special. Just your face. And what's coming up for me when I look is you know, is the pain, I can see the pain and I feel, I know that I've been through a lot of pain as well and I don't know, it's special. I just want to say thank you. Thank you for your pain. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, pain is also our richness. I know that when we are in the middle of it, it's very difficult to really feel that, but it is our richness.
Thank you.
Hello everyone, hi Roshi. I don't have much to say, I just want to thank you. And I was, what came up was seeing on this screen in front of me, you know, people from White Flower and also from Dana, and just the love of the spiritual friendship that I appreciate so much. So wonderful to to share this practice together over the years, over decades, and over countries. And I'm so, and the second thing is what you were saying made me think of, this morning I was reading Pascal, and I was the philosopher, and I was reading the pages of Divertissement, and I, because I'm very interested in that notion of being, how we entertain ourselves, not to that, when we get diverted from the great matter of life and death. Yeah. And I really like that notion of how we entertain ourselves and the kind of try to avoid it and face the our humanity that includes joy and also suffering. That's what came up for me.
We are expert as distractions. Yeah, we're expert, you know, the moment where you feel something uncomfortable. Oh, maybe I go to a movie, or maybe I go get a good book, you know, and yeah. We are good. We are really good at that.
Well, thank you. And thank you, everyone. So glad to see you all.
Bonjour. Freddie.
Good evening, everyone. I was listening to a speaker who was saying that our life is governed by pain and pleasure, and pain and pleasure define who we are. And I was just thinking about that, pain and pleasure, we are defined by pain and pleasure.
Sure. Yes.
And how we avoid pain to go to do something that that is enjoyable. And that we need to unite with this pain, but it's so difficult. So difficult. Even when we listen to this kind of wise thing, it's so difficult. Thank you for your wise words.
You know, I have this belief, or it comes from my experience and also from seeing other people, that the pain which comes, at the moment it comes, that's what we can take. Although often we think, no, that's too much. Huh? No, I'm not ready for that. No, later. I still believe, and it has been like that with me, you know, that still it's exactly the amount I can take, you know. And I've seen that with people. It's exactly the amount. Of course, I mean, the Oyuki amount, the right amount, you know. Sometimes it's not my opinion that it's the right amount. You know, but I think that's how we develop the trust in oneself, in our capacity. You know? But the amount of joy, the amount of pain, we have the right amount. Even if I think this time it's really too much, no, it's exactly what I need to grow up. That's exactly what I need to expand. You know? Yes.
Hello, everyone. I was just listening what you're saying, and I work with helping people to be with pain that it's locked inside. What I see is that finally what completely releases is the complete acceptance, and when we are completely in presence to it as it is, without trying to solve anything, just in love there.
Yes.
But in the meanwhile, we have to, most of the times, to negotiate that you were saying, that the right amount, like, because the nervous system and the psyche, whatever, can't feel it all at once. And so we go to a bit of pleasure to discharge the charge and then get confidence to go again a bit more. Because if we allow to come everything, the fear closes again, the ability to receive. And that, so what Freddie was saying too, because yeah, we need pleasure, yeah. It's not forgetting pain.
Yes.
But we need pleasure.
Yes, yes.
To regulate ourselves, to regulate our nervous system. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
Absolutely agree. There are times also, or there is a deep joy in letting this pain be. There is a deep joy. The joy of truth, the joy of, here it is, you know. But the thing is that we are never sure of if there is more to come. we don't attain anything from good ever, you know. We are, it's moving. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have another successor here, Tanya. Hello, Tanya.
Good evening. Hi.
I'm doing like what Genpo Roshi does with me all the time. Genpo Roshi, can you say something? I'm doing that to you now. Sorry. But I would love to hear you.
Well, I was just sitting here reflecting after a day of sitting with people who, like myself, have spent a long time suppressing or avoiding pain. And I think that what you were just saying about that, when you let it be, or awareness holds it, there is such a relief, because it takes so much effort to, you know, you were saying about the truth. There's this truth, so that's the joy, because it takes so much effort to try to avoid it or suppress it, or, and it makes it kind of like solid. Whereas when we let it be, that it's not a, it, we also experience it's not as solid as it feels when we're really trying to avoid it or push it away.
Yes. You said a very important word. It's not as solid that we thought. That's it. Nothing is as solid as we think. Nothing is solid. Not the pain, not the joy. Well, you know, in this awareness, another way to say it is to recognize the nature of our mind. This awareness, this is recognizing the nature of our mind. And recognizing the nature of our mind is that nothing is solid. Thank you. And we make it's a lot of effort to make things solid and to hold on to it. It's also a lot of effort, yes.
Someone else raised the hand. I'm sorry, I don't know your name. And then Alexei also raised his hand.
Yes, Alexei.
Do you know me? Do you mean me? No. Okay.
Yes, I meant you.
May want to ask a question.
Yes.
Okay. So, first, thank you so much, Roshi, and. It was so beautiful what you said when about expanding souls, about real awareness could be truly the very place of love. It was so nice, and so thank you so much. You said it so beautifully. And is there in this awareness what is the sense of field Ariane as a path? What is how keeping open a sense of pass?
Well, a sense of what?
Of pass, of chemin.
A path, yes.
Yes.
Letting go. Letting go. Let go. Don't hold on to things too long. Let go. That's the path to develop awareness. To experience this kind of background, I don't know how to say that, you know, in which things come and go. Just let go and let be, which is the same, actually. You know, if you let go, then something else can be, and that circulates. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, Zoom Benutzer, that's what I have on my screen.
Okay. Yeah. Good evening. Roshi, I just want to say you that I'm so moved to be here and to see you, and that I feel guided on a very weird, dense day to just hear what I heard, also from the Sangha. It's incredible for me. And really a bit difficult to identify what was it exactly. Just perhaps the thing that struck me very much is this awareness that is disguised as a person. I immediately felt that it would help me. I so much want to have this neutral, more neutral, impersonal place to stand in, or even not to stand in, just to feel it also. And this idea that you gave us will help me, or that is coming from Eckhart Tolle, I think. And then yeah. And then another thing. I never could so well connect to how pain is related to truth and joy. And I'm so grateful. Thank you. This is actually what I experience, especially in the last months, what I feel in a way so happy with, and I could not really understand why I feel so happy. but it is more. And I also want to thank Amy, because through Amy I came here, and I want to thank everybody, because I feel also the field here. And I was not aware how well I feel with this Sangha. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing when we start to share. It's amazing what the intimacy which is created in a group like this, you know. I think you express it very well, that you don't even know what that is, you know. I mean, okay, there are words and there are things which resonate, and we need that. We need that to communicate, you know. I'm totally inspired by Shapkar right now. I'm reading it. I'm savoring it, and it's my practice, really. And at the same time, you know, what is going on? It's also beyond of this.
Absolutely. Would you mind putting the name of the author, of this Tibetan author, into the chat? I couldn't understand it so well, or any other person who could.
I'm not sure I can do the chat. I'm sorry, I'm not.
Oh,
I'm not
okay. Don't mind. I can.
No, I can tell you, Shapkar. S H E A A B K A R. Shapkar.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yes, I can see it now. Yes, voilà. Thank you, Roshi.
Voilà. So there is autobiography, and there is also songs, a book of songs. He wrote some, is really something, l'equivalent of Milarepa, if you are familiar with Milarepa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The yogi much before him, and 13th century. And this one is from the 19th century, but he had the same kind of life and the same kind, and also he wrote a lot and songs.
Mm.
A long time ago, but I don't know if some of you were around. I think in Vimoutier, maybe, I don't know if you were already here. Yes, I commented the the flight of the Garuda one summer. And now when I look at it, when I read it, and I think it's so profound, I wonder what I did 30 years ago, how I had the courage to comment that, you know, because it's so profound. It's it's one of my plan to try to comment it again.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Oh, we have a young man, a very young man. Hello.
I have a question.
Yes.
Since you're talking about suffering. This is something that has kind of always puzzled. I mean, yeah, I was wondering, what's your take? How do you understand? What do you make out of this, what seems to be an ancient Buddhist tenet about this whole practice moving towards the end of suffering? That seems to be one of the ancient basic tenets of Buddhism.
Yes.
So how do you understand it?
In the Heart Sutra, there is suffering and no end to suffering. Okay. Let's be clear about this. For me, the ceasing of suffering, the end of suffering, is not that my personal suffering is going to be gone forever. It's maybe what I can say the most, that Bernie said there is selfish suffering and selfless suffering. You see the difference? the selfish suffering, I'm so concentrated on me, on me, 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 me. The selfless suffering, there is more space there. I think the selfless suffering can develop through awareness, through training, through sitting, through accepting the suffering, not fixing, not holding on to it too much, and so on. You know, and then there is an expansion of this. Very, very, very constricted sense of I am suffering so much, you know, which is probably our biggest suffering, I would say, when it's so constricted. It's me, it's mine, it's mine, it's mine. The moment where there is this, I realize, you know, that there is something also which is common to everybody, you know. Even this pain I which was so strong, which came up, you know, I know that so many children have it and so on. It's not that in order to diminish it, you know, to say, well, you know, everybody suffers, forget it. No, it's not about this. You know. But you know, one day someone in the talk said that he knows a woman who had insomnia. And at one point, that was extremely painful. She could not sleep at night and she was awake all night and so on. And then she started to think of all the people who have insomnia in the same time. And that was a relief. You see that? That was a relief. And she started to sleep. You know? There is something where we stop holding on to me, you know. That's how, for me, that's my experience of suffering. The maybe there is a moment where suffering and not suffering is not so dominant, prevalent, or something like that. No, it's almost like this is not the point anymore. Something like that. No, we can go further, or we can go in a different place or different space, but that it is triggered by a very, very personal suffering. Yes, I that's the truth. It's a very personal suffering, and this personal suffering can enlarge something like that. Freddy. Yes, Freddy.
Suffering is we love our disguisement. We love the disguisement. That's the suffering. We love it. The carnival is coming, and we love it.
Yeah, you know. I mean, boy, I've not talked about it, but we are attached to suffering. We are attached. You know. I mean, I think that's another chapter, but. You know, that gives us a sense of something solid, that's it, that's me, that's, you know, and I'm right, and that this, and that should not happen this way, and all this. There's such an attachment to it. That's such an attachment. And I know this is also more revolting to say that when to somebody who is in the middle of suffering, you can't say that because you have to respect that, but you know, and I know that for myself, that when I'm in the middle of it, I don't like to hear that, but still it's the truth. You tell me, Amy, when we finish, huh? This is your
as long as people want to keep asking questions, we're fine.
Yeah, okay. Stefan raised his hand.
Okay. Yeah, what you said Bernie and selfless suffering. It reminds me when we did the first Auschwitz retreat, we read the book by Etty Hillison, and she is such an inspirational example for the selfless suffering. She was one with herself, and out of that, she served all the people of her community to a point where she, as a Jew working for the Jewish network, deliberately went to Auschwitz knowing that that is where she will be killed. And she could have gone, escaped. But I don't have any doubt from reading her book that there was profound suffering in seeing all the things that happened. But she didn't take it on. And you said, like, we attach to suffering or something like that. But it's like, who is actually attaching? And who is letting go? It's just a curse.
I mean, if I already can say who is attaching to suffering, this is it. I'm not attaching anymore. You know, if I can see through the who is doing it, fine. But it's difficult sometimes to see. But Etty Hillison, she even transformed the suffering into bliss. I mean, she was in bliss in Auschwitz. Yes, and the way she talked about it, she wrote about it, seems so true, so true. But because she was with everyone, she was one with everyone. Yes. Because that's what it is also, you know, the difference between selfish suffering and selfless suffering. One is separating, selfish is separating us from everything. And the selfless is you making everything one. That's so obvious. There is no separation there.
Well, if no one has any other, this is your last chance. Comments, questions? No?
Roshi, will you do it again, please?
Which Roshi are you talking to?
I meant you and also Amy as well. Yes, please.
Okay.
Yes, we will invite Roshi back again. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah. So good to see you, Sheila, again. After, I don't know, you were in Vimoutier, huh?
I was.
Yes,
It's Zoom. It's because of Zoom that I've managed to get involved again. Thank something for Zoom.
Yeah, and thank Amy for keeping doing it, because for me, I've given up on Zoom. I want to see people in person.
Yeah.
Thank you, Amy, for doing that.
Can't make it.
Right. I was going to say, I like to see people in person too, but we work with the ingredients that we have, and this is it. So.
Absolutely.
That's wonderful.
And then I can see Thomas, I can see Miguel. I saw you years ago in Portugal, and Freddie, which I never see, you know, and Dominique Ida, I've not seen for ages. And so it's really nice. Thank you all. Thank you all for being here and and sharing this practice and practicing with all of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Roshi. And thank you all for joining us. We end with the four vows. Just before, for those of you who are wildflowers, we have a day of practice on Saturday. So the study group will not be held. We will be sitting all day. If you haven't signed up and you want to, it's not too late. And otherwise, we'll see you in the Zoom Zendo for the other sittings.
And we have a big Sangha gathering in April where you can see the whole Sangha, the Dana Sangha and all the successor Sangha and so on. That's going to be a big family reunion.
Okay.